Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. UFC 230. Daniel D.C. Cormier, the still, for now, champ until John Jones takes on Alex Gustafson. And you know what? Don't get me started there because we have to talk about DC taking on Hot Balls, Derek the Black Beast Lewis. Heavyweight championship on the line at Madison Square Garden. We're here to break it down for your DraftKings contest. I am your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. The analyst for this podcast is Joe Sunsu. Chris at Real Chris Olsen on Twitter. Chris, we'll start with you this week. How are you doing? Are you as excited for this card as I know Joe and I are?
I'm very excited. I know why you guys are excited, which I'm sure you'll get to in a second. But I think there's a lot of really fun matchups here. And even the fights that are kind of like, either going to be big brawls or like end in the first round, those are even kind of intriguing to me a little bit. So a fun card, I think, all around.
Dude, you look like you'd get carded buying cigarettes right now. How long did it take you to shave that?
Oh, man, it's, it's the new me. I didn't have a great week last week, so yeah. I feel, like superstition. Shave the beard, it comes off. And
I mean, you're not quite as bad as Buddha. You're not quite as bad as Buddha who gets carded when he sits in an exit row.
This is what 14. We were talking about last week, Joe, when everyone was on you for the facial hair.
I shaved.
Just trimmed my beard, called it a day. But, Joe, you and I will be there, UFC 230. I'm pumped. We're going to be there well before the first fight, taking everything in, tweeting all that stuff out. Are you – I mean, you have to be as excited as I am.
Oh, I'm fucking psyched. So Sean and I are going to be living the sweet life tomorrow. So we got a hookup. Thank you, DraftKings, to go to this event at MSG. And we will be meeting some dignitaries and, DFS legends. I don't know all of the attendees yet. I know a few. We will be tweeting live from MSG. And I know my good friend Mike, he'd rather be cage side. I like the sweet life, maybe just because I'm a bit older, but I like living the sweet life.
You know, it's part of it wants me to be cage side. There's pros and cons to both. Mm-hmm. DraftKings hooked us up. I'm not going to complain one bit. We're going to go and enjoy the event. You know what? Before we get into this card for DraftKings, I want to mention our sponsor, RotoWire. RotoWire.com/free. Check out all their usually paid content, 10 days, no credit card required, season-long, all sports, daily fantasy, all sports, optimizers, articles, all the good stuff. Go check it out. RotoWire. RotoWire MMA is the podcast feed we're on iTunes. Also subscribe to the RotoWire YouTube channel, which hopefully you're watching this live. If you're not and you're listening after the fact, either on YouTube or iTunes, make sure and subscribe. We go live Friday nights, ask us some questions. I haven't popped over to chat yet, but it's usually popping with some good questions and or just people ragging on each other. Generally a good time. So thanks everybody who follows those. Should like those videos, subscribe, like those videos, subscribe, share them. You know, trying to get to grow this thing as big as we can. And with that being said, let's start. I want to start with a slate overview this week. We didn't even talk about this pre, but this is an interesting slate to me in that there are a lot of really wide lines. Personally, I don't think there's a lot of value for cash games, as in, like, I know there's a lot of – there's not many dogs I'm expecting to win or I'm picking to win, but there are tons who are live. And that makes it an interesting GPP card for me and how I'm going to approach it. I'm still going to play cash, but – not a lot of dogs I'm picking to win with these big lines, but there are plenty who are live, and we'll get to them along the way. Chris, is there anything other than that that stands out to you about this card as a whole before we dig into the individual fights?
No, I would pretty much agree. I would say a lot of this card is either comprised of big favorites who I think should win or, like you said, dogs that probably won't but are live. So, I mean, there aren't a lot of dogs I love this week, but there are definitely a couple that, you know, I'm keeping my eye on, and the price is kind of so, you know, we'll get into that. But yeah, overall, I think it's definitely a better GPP card, as you said.
Joe, how about for you?
Well, I mean, I didn't play cash last week because I thought it was a GPP card, and I knocked on the door. I finished 11th in the $10, but you know how the money falls off after the first couple of spots. So I think that was maybe $300. For 10, which isn't bad, but, you know, wasn't what I was hoping for. I think this week is even more of a GPP card. I will, again, for the second week in a row, not be playing any cash. I will be exclusively playing GPPs. I'm a little disappointed in the prize pool, you know, given that it's a pay-per-view card. I get that it's not $229. We sold out the $10, though, in $229 hours before the card, you know, lineups locked, and we had $100,000 first prize in the 10. Here we have 25, which is better than, you know, UFC Moncton. But I mean, I would have thought we could have gotten a little better, but you know, look, you play what you get dealt. I think on paper, this is an interesting card. I don't think it's nearly as good as the Toronto card, which I'm really looking forward to. UFC 231, which just looks absolutely stacked. There are a lot of high dollar line favorites here, which is a little worrisome. You know, you're going to have to find the right dogs. You know, could be some significantly high scores. But, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But it is a GPP card.
Before we dig into the fights, I jumped over to chat, and we have somebody in here, Dave LB, who I see every week, telling me that he's the one who took down the $15,000 prize last week.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations, so, bro. I did see your name on – I didn't know who you were, but I did see your name on the top there. Wait, so, well done. Well
congrats.
Done.
Congrats. It looks like he had – I think he just shared his lineup here. Serkinov, Cater, Sukumta, Strickland, Smith, and Madge.
Did he tie or did he take it down?
I think he took it down solo. So big congrats to Dave. I've been messaging him in chat. If you can go into a recent contest, take that a screenshot and send it to me on Twitter. That'd be awesome. But either way, congratulations.
Yeah.
Huge hit.
Well done.
And that's why you should listen to Fight IQ. And let's dig in and see if we can find another. I think this week first prize in the big contest is $25,000.
Yep.
So let's even get a $25,000 winner. Personally, for me, I'm going to be chasing the 5K in the $44 leg sweep. That's where I've chosen to play more than a couple lineups. So that being said, though, let's jump into it. And I think similar to the last time I went to a fight card with Joe before one of these podcasts, I am going to be heavily exposed to the first fight of the night. Didn't go so well last time, but it doesn't matter where I think the best spot on the card is in terms of order of the night. It's where is the best spot, and you play it. Adam Wojcik, 8,600. Take Marco Ruggiero de Lima. It is Paisao from his season of The Ultimate Fighter. And I heard a noise, which means my connection might have cut out again, but no one's stopping me, so I'm going to keep rolling here.
Keep going.
Wojcik is the minus 200 favorite. Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, the comeback on him, is plus 185. This fight is an under 1.5 rounds, minus 132. Minus 425 does not go to decision. Screams GPP fight in that way. But for me, I like Ruggiero de Lima in all formats. He's the one dog that I'm picking to win straight up. I can't live in a world where Adam Wojcik is 3-0 in the UFC. I just... that would be hard for me to stomach. He's beaten Arjan Bular and by omoplata, and he beat Anthony Hamilton, who I have a long history with Anthony Hamilton that I won't go into a expletive-laced rant. Ruggiero de Lima, what's interesting about him, and I'll let these guys talk about it, is this is his first fight at heavyweight. He's been a light heavyweight. Struggled to make 205, missed weight a couple times, and had one round of gas in those fights and gassed out. My man weighed in at 253 pounds today. How in the world did that guy make light heavyweight? I think he blitzes Wojcik. Wojcik, even if he survives, Wojcik's a point fighter. Doesn't scare me a lot. The concern is the gas tank of Ruggiero, but I think he's the better fighter. I'm hoping the move up helps him. Give me Marcos Ruggiero de Lima. We'll start with Chris on this one. Chris, how do you have this? Are you supporting my one underdog pick on the night?
I am, but not completely. When I first looked at this fight, I saw the line for the Gamble Master thing. I thought it was like 175 was the last I saw, plus 175 for De Lima. And I was like, oh, it's great to get him at a dog price because, you know, I certainly don't think that highly of Wojcik. He leaves his chin out there very high. He gets tagged up a whole lot. You know, he's very susceptible to being taken down. But then I remembered who Paisao is, and it's just so hard to trust this guy. I mean, he loses fights in ways you couldn't even imagine. The last fight he had again, not the last fight he had, but one of his losses against, who was that? Pull it up right here. His loss against Antigulov, where he got caught in the guillotine. He had ample opportunity to step over into side control. He didn't do it. He allowed Antigulov to readjust and get the choke, and then never fought hands, and then just submitted. Similarly, in the OSP fight, he had a good first half of the first round, a good first round in general, actually, and then got taken down, was getting beaten on, and then sort of just allowed himself to slip into the Von Flue choke. I mean, the guy gasses out a lot. I know he's moving up to heavyweight, but we still haven't seen him have the gas tank, so it's good to imagine that in theory that the move up would help him, but we don't know that yet. I would like to pick De Lima confidently very much. It's just ridiculously hard to trust him. It feels like he gets to a point in each fight where he's done fighting, and then that's it. Wojcik, you know, doesn't do much on the feet, has some good body kicks, head kicks, but the thing about Wojcik is at least I can trust him to know what he's doing in the fight, and I don't feel that way about De Lima. So can De Lima win? Yes. Should you have exposure to both? Absolutely. As far as the pick, I don't know. I guess I'll go De Lima to knock him out before he decides to quit, but I'm not so sure about that.
Even if you're not so sure, I think it's the best dog spot on the card. And that's really what the point I wanted to hammer home. Joe?
Well, I mean, he's going to be highly owned. This is a pure yes. GPP play. I mean, I don't know how you could feel confident taking De Lima in cash. I certainly see De Lima early. If the fight goes into a second round, I am going to be less certain about my play. I am going to be more highly weighted towards De Lima. I actually like more dogs than Sean does on this card, so we'll go through it later. It's not technically going to be the best sub-8K dog odds-wise, but given his price point, I think he's going to be probably the highest owned dog on the card. So I'm going to pick De Lima too.
Sorry, Joe. So here's my question. If if this is a really highly weighted dog and we know how much we can't trust him, does it make sense then to go Wyzerik for the contrarian play, knowing this fight's probably going to finish?
I think he's going to be under-owned. The question is with Wyzerik is what is he going to score? I mean, if he grinds out a third round decision at his price point, is it going to be enough, for a GPP to get him on the winning lineup? I don't see how you're going to get 12x out of him in a win. Maybe if you want to look at him in cash, but again, I'm not playing any cash, so I haven't really thought about cash this week. You know, so I see De Lima as a GPP play. I would not feel overly comfortable having him in cash. There are other fighters I would rather play in cash if I was going to play cash, but I think he will be very or relatively low owned, so he could be a good contrarian play.
All right, that will be my longest spiel of the episode. That's the fight I really wanted to target. But another one I'm interested in, Montel Jackson, 8,300, taking on Brian Boom Kelleher at 7,900. Montel Jackson is the favorite, -135. The comeback on Kelleher is +105. Montel Jackson got grinded out by Ricky Simone last time out. Brian Kelleher was knocked out by John Lineker 6 months ago. Sorry, just got a request to update my computer. That would have been tragic.
Yeah.
Kelleher, look, his win over Damian Stasiak is not that impressive to me. He's, you know, he beat Henan Barao, but it was 2017 Henan Barao. I still picked Barao in that fight, and it was a war. Jackson is really long, I think, going to pose some problems. I know he got taken down by Ricky Simone, but he defended 13 of 20 takedowns and popped up after most of them. He's super long. He's super athletic. He is relatively green. I still like the newcomer to promote to give Kelleher enough problems at range using that length advantage. So give me Montel Jackson. Joe, who do you have for this one?
Okay, so there is a little bit of narrative on this fight. Kelleher missed weight. He will be giving 20% of his purse. The fight will go on. That's the good news. We'll be giving 20% of his purse to Jackson. The other part of the narrative is that Jackson has only been a pro for about a year. He's had 6 fights. He will come into this with a significant reach advantage. He has about an 8 to 9 inch reach advantage. He's really long. He was taken down at will by Simone. A bunch of us bought in. He was a big pork chop for a lot of us because he was pure line value when he last fought.
Will's a little rough.
Yeah,
he defended 65%.
Yeah, but when you get taken down 12 times, if you defend the other 8 or however many times he was taken down.
12?
He got taken down a lot. I don't know exactly, but it was a lot. It was
7 of 20, if I remember right.
Yeah, so, but, you know, you still got taken down 7 times. That's still a lot.
It's Simone against Kelleher.
Here's the deal. And then Kelleher, on the other hand, way more experienced, better jiu-jitsu. It's in his backyard. He's not going to be intimidated by the MSG crowd. So there is some narrative here. On the other side, Jackson, I've been following some plays on him. Dudas, Clay Davis on Twitter, who is a pretty large unit player, just put a unit on Jackson. I think this could be an interesting fight to target if Kelleher could get inside of Jackson. I don't see Jackson finishing him, first and foremost. But if Kelleher could get inside of Jackson, inside of the reach, and takes him down and maybe works his jits, I could certainly see Kelleher being very successful. I mean, look, if Lineker, if it took 3 rounds for Lineker to finish, Kelleher, I don't see Montel Jackson doing it. So I'm going to go for the dog. This is the fight with the narrowest odds. Kelleher actually opened as a favorite and the line flipped. It's now, I think, he's now +130, something like that. It's a real tight line. I'm going to have shares of both, but I'm picking Kelleher to win.
Chris, how about you?
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and pick Kelleher here. I just feel like, look, I like Montel. I think he does a little bit of everything well. He can strike, he can grapple. I actually thought he did a fairly good job stuffing most of those takedowns in round 1 and 2. Round 3, Simone kind of poured it on. But I just like Kelleher. Joe alluded to his ability to get inside. That's exactly what I think is going to happen. I think he's going to pressure him pretty relentlessly. I mean, not Simone relentlessly with the grappling, but I really think he's going to put a heavy dose of pressure on him and take those kicks and that long reach away. We saw Montel have problems when Simone was doing that. Again, as I know, not as much of a relentless grappler, but I think the principle is the same. And I like Kelleher's movement. I think he can wrestle some. And I just expect him to put a pace on Montel and outwork him. And so, yeah, I'm going to go with Kelleher.
Okay, fair enough. I think, disagree on that one. I'm more of a believer in the young gun. But I actually do think Kelleher is going after Ruggiero de Lima, be the most popular dog on the card. Granted, he's also the most expensive at 7,900, but for what it's worth. All right, moving on. Hurricane Shane Burgos, 9,000, taking on Kurt Hollabaugh at 7,200. Burgos, the big favorite, minus 330. The comeback on Hollabaugh, plus 240. This fight, under 2.5, minus 140. Does not go to decision, minus 190. I like this fight for GPPs quite a bit. I think, obviously, these two guys are going to stand and trade until someone goes down. Burgos carries his hands low, has more power. Hollabaugh, super tough, took a beating against Raoni Barcelos and is also willing to trade. I think Burgos gets the job done here, but this is a fight I'm going to target both sides of. Chris?
Yeah, I have to take issue with one thing right off the bat. I don't think Burgos has more power than Hollabaugh. I think Hollabaugh has maybe significantly more power. I mean, I think that Shane Burgos...
Why would you think that?
Because Burgos is a volume striker. Who have we seen Burgos hit? And I mean, it took him three rounds to finish Charles Rosa. Qatar took all of his shots. I just don't see him having that much power.
I watch Shane Burgos knock down Godofredo Pepe three times. You don't see in that division guys. You don't see guys that division laying people out cold outside of like Cody Garbrandt.
I'm not talking about laying him out cold. I haven't even seen him wobble anybody. When has that happened?
He knocked down Pepe three times. He knocked down Charles Rosa once. He knocked down Traitor once. Hollabaugh doesn't have a knockdown in the UFC.
He's only got two fights in the UFC.
Six knockdowns.
All right. Well, anyway, moving on from that, I stand by my contention that the viewers can chime in on what they think about that. But
Chat, who has more power, Chat? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I wish I could put a poll up in here, but I don't think that I can. But anyway, Shane Burgos is one of a few fighters on this card for me who, although probably I think the most skilled one, but he's one of a couple fighters on this card for me who I never really loved the prospect hype on. I just think you mentioned he carries his hands low. Aside from that, he pretty much just walks straight into range and doesn't move his head. Qatar was lighting him on fire with the jab, basically all fight. Charles Rosa was winning that fight until going into the third round, just because Rosa was, working and then getting out of range. I think Hollabaugh is good enough defensively and has good enough movement to where he's not going to be flustered with the constant forward pressure. I think this is a significant sticking point, I guess, who you think has the most power, because I think Hollabaugh is going to be able to hit him hard enough with a counter shot, or maybe one of those counter hooks that he likes, that he's going to be able to change that pressure and change the outcome that way. So I think Burgos has too many liabilities here. I acknowledge that he has some skills. I love guys who come forward like he does. I love his body work, which he does a lot of. But, Hollabaugh has that too. I think it's a pretty even fight, but for me, it hinges on the guy I feel like has more power and the guy who's probably a little more defensively responsible. And for me, that's Hollabaugh. So
I'll give you more defensively responsible. That's clear. I think Burgos is the better striker, but let's have Joe break this tie. Joe, who you got?
Well, I hate to do this to you, Sean, but I'm going to take a shot on Hollabaugh as well. I mean, I don't know that I think he's a live dog here. I'm very impressed with Barcelos. So I mean, he lasted three rounds with Barcelos. If you go back and look at – Halabak has had 22 fights. If you go back and look at his career, I mean, he actually was a favorite against Andre Harrison, who is probably one of the best fighters in the weight class outside of the UFC. And it was a three-round decision. And he was a slight, I think, minus 155 favorite. I think he caught a buzzsaw. I think this is going to be a very competitive fight that should be targeted, especially in GPPs. I think the line is much too wide, the betting line. It would be dog or pass if I was betting this fight in DraftKings. I will be higher weighted to the dog here, and I'm going to pick Halabak to win.
I will be targeting both sides in GPPs. Real quick, before I go to the next fight, let me scroll through chat live real quick to see people are talking. Burgos, more power. Halabak throws straight punches, so he needs to be faster. Halabak's last opponent coming off a two-year layoff. Both can eat shots all day. So only one straight vote there, so I can't even really claim the victory. But you guys should keep talking about it. I'm actually, we'll move on from that fight. Interesting one, though. One that I think is great for DraftKings on either side. Move on to the next fight. Lando Groovy Venata, 8,900, taking on Matt the Steamroller Frivola at 7,300. And this is one that I think I would take this closer to the stance that you guys did in the last fight. I think that Lando Venata is pretty overrated. He's 1-3-1 in the UFC, 0-2-1 in his last three fights. Draw against Bobby Green. His only win in the UFC was the wheel kick knockout over John McDessie, who I believe is retired at this point. The problem, and we've seen him fade in fights. We saw him fade, obviously, against Bobby Green. We saw him fade against Danny Tamer. Gas tank is suspect. Matt Frivola, though, he is, like Burgos, not defensively responsible at all. Walks toward people, brings pressure. Marco Polo Reyes knocked him out cold. I think these guys will stand and trade as well. If anyone's going to grapple, it will be Frivola. I have worries about Venata's gas tank. Overall, I think Venata is clearly the cleaner, more polished striker and will be able to move off the center line and counter Frivola. So he's my pick to win. But I have a lot of concern about Venata that I outlined in the open. And this is another fight similar to the last one that I think the dog is live, and I'm probably going to play both sides if you're playing the favorite. Joe, we'll start with you for this one.
Wow, I couldn't disagree more.
You into the hype train of Lando Venata?
So Lando Venata is one of two fighters that I feel the UFC is throwing a bone. We'll talk about the other one when we get there. Generally coming off three losses, you don't get another fight for the most part. So I think the UFC likes him. There is some narrative here. Lando Venata has left Jackson. So with that big split with Cowboy Cerrone, he went with Cowboy Cerrone. I actually think that's a good thing here. I don't think he was progressing all that much at Jackson's. I think a camp change could be a good thing for him. Let's look at Davola. I mean, he was a minus 200 favorite against Polo Reyes and was victimized as what is now considered to be the 30th best knockout of 2018 as a minus 200 favorite. So I think this is a perfect matchup for Venata. Venata, now you mentioned you thought that if there was wrestling in this fight, it would be by Davola. Lando's a D1 wrestler. He hasn't used it all that much, but he is a D1 wrestler. So
that's why it stays standing.
This is one of my favorite plays on the card. I like Lando a fair amount here, as much for the narrative and the fact that I really do believe the UFC is throwing this guy a bone and saying, okay, you lost three fights. They were really tough fights, but we are going to give you one that we think you can win and get your confidence back. And, with the camp change, again, he is right at that 8.9K? Yep. So he's right at sub 9. I like him a lot. That's my
Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, Venata is another one of those guys who I've never quite understood the hype on. I've actually never picked Venata to win a fight in the UFC. I just don't love his style, which I think relies on more flesh than it does substance. I think a guy like Jakar Close in the last fight had the perfect style to beat him. If you just apply pressure to him, you know, he can't get off all his kicks and all that good stuff. That's exciting, but, you know, not round winning, and I think likely not fight winning. The thing about a guy like Frivola, though, even though he's going to apply all that pressure, and he will, is that, you know, he is just wild. He's a madman. And I don't know. The problem is, if you love Vannata, as Joe does, is that we've never seen him deal with, like, this kind of balls-out pressure. And we've certainly never seen him deal with it effectively. As I mentioned, all the guys that really pressure him beat him. I mean, McDessie, we all remember the wheel kick. McDessie was winning that fight with pressure boxing before that wheel kick happened. So it's a tough call for me, just because I'm not a fan of the way Lando fights. I acknowledge that he's tough, but he also gasses out. And for a guy who relies on his movement for defense the way Lando does, a gas Lando Vannata is one that's going to eat shots. Marco Polo Reyes is a boxer by trade, so I expect him to know that distance and be able to slide out of it a lot more easily than a guy like Lando. Can I trust Frivola is the question. And I haven't really seen Vannata as much of a counterpuncher. So the short answer to all this ramble is I think Vannata is going to have to show this to me. And I think I'm taking Frivola to win the fight.
Wow.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of – now, even if – it's not out of the question, Joe, that the UFC is throwing him a bone and Frivola does get knocked out again, I still don't think that Vannata is that good. I think he's – like Chris said, we're on the same pitch. I think he's a lot of flash, and we've seen it a few times before, and even if he wins here, I'm going to fade him in the future.
Can I just say that I know that he's one-dimensional and exploitable, but I don't think you would classify any Frivola matchup as throwing you a bone, because if you slip up one time, he's going to take off your head. So, I mean, you still got to be sharp to beat him. It's not like, you know.
It's a competition, say, though.
Joe missed some narrative here. Frivola's from Long Island. He's from my neck of the woods. Hometown guy, kind of like Keller. He's actually closer to New York City than where Keller lives, I believe.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I'm sure that'll go a long way in his
But you can't mention it. You can't mention it for some and not others.
Oh, look, that's fine. What is this camp? I don't even. I you know.
I think he fights out of the Long Island MMA camp with
Chris Wade. Those guys.
They
have him as Gracie Tampa. They have him. No, that's Sarah Longo. That I mean, they have him as Gracie Tampa South. That's his.
Wow.
And they say he's fighting out of Tampa, Florida, born in Huntington, New York, but fighting out of Tampa, Florida.
I remember on the last card, he was fighting out of Huntington, so maybe he made a camp move. All right, let's move on to – oh, good. I get to talk about another overhyped fighter. Lyman Good, 9,500, taking on Ben Killaby Saunders at 6,700. Saunders, the underdog, a big one, plus 425. Good, the favorite, at minus 650. Huge inside the distance prop, minus 345 for the fight. I have a sneaking suspicion, and people are going to call me crazy, and I get the numbers behind it and the history, so don't go crazy. This is my gut feeling. We're going to see the judges in this fight. Lyman Good has fought – this will be his third fight in the last 3 years, almost 4 years. Last time out against Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos, he said he didn't want to trade because he was afraid of getting knocked out in between rounds. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what happened. Now, I get Santos and Saunders are different. I also understand that Saunders, we haven't seen the judges' scorecards in his last four fights. Three of those he was finished, and once he got a finish over Jay Gellenberger. He's 1-3 in those last four, you know, 2-4 in his last six. I just think Lyman Good is overhyped. He looks like he should be a terrifying friggin' monster. And we know Saunders at the tail end of his career. If Lyman Good goes out and starches him, I'm not going to be stunned. I just think the line is a product of people fading Saunders. We saw him 2 months ago get subbed out by Sergio Moraes in that video of them practicing in the back. Obviously a way different fight here. If this fight hits the ground, I would actually lean Saunders. It's getting it there, and is good going to knock him out? It could totally happen, but good's in that price range around, you know, it's going to cost me $100 to get Daniel Cormier. I'm going to take Cormier 10 out of 10 times. I have a hard time getting there. That's my quick breakdown of the fight. I am picking Lyman good. I think Saunders is going to make this a dirtier fight. Maybe pull guard once, get it to the ground in one round, and be at a distance with those knees and then the clinch where it's hard for good to get a finish. So give me good in a very odd decision victory. And for this one, we're up to starting with Chris.
Yeah, I think good's going to knock him out. I mean, yeah.
I do want to say my little ramble right there. I am by far in a minority, and I understand it. And it's not like I'm playing a lot of Ben Saunders. It's just where my ownership's going
to
go.
No, I understand. And I understand the point you made about the price going up to Cormier, too. But, look, I mean, Lyman Good is just a pressure boxer who hits hard. And at this stage of Ben Saunders' career, I think that's enough. I don't even necessarily disagree with thinking Lyman Good's overhyped. I just don't know what Ben Saunders is going to be able to do in a matchup like this. Ben Saunders essentially just likes to use body kicks and work off his back. He doesn't have much of a boxing game. He gets backed up very easily. Of course, we know about his acumen in the clinch that could come into play here, but the path to victory is just so narrow for me. And Lyman Good is going to be in his face all fight. He hits very hard. Ben Saunders tends to get hit very hard. So, yeah, I see this ending in a knockout.
Oh, I'm assuming you're just not, you're thinking I'm crazy here and you're going to be checking my temperature tomorrow night.
Favorite play on the card is Lyman Good. Favorite play in GPPs and cash. Well, I'm not playing cash, so I'm not going to comment on cash. I like him more than DC. The narrative here is, how in the heck did Sanders get another fight? I mean, you know, the only time he's looked remotely good, and I'm not making a disparaging comment because I think Sanders is a very cool dude. But the only time he looked good was against Jake Ellenberger. And I know for a fact that when his head hits the pillow at night, he knocks himself out. So yeah, he finished Ellenberger. That was his one fight where he's looked impressive in the last few years. I would be shocked if Lyman Good does not finish him in the first round. He is my favorite play on the slate.
I just got to point out, we look in chat, we see chat's telling us prop bet for decision is plus 515. So get on that, Sean. That's all you.
Yeah, like I said, it was a gut feeling and a sneaking suspicion, guys. I feel like I pointed that out very clearly at the start here. All right, next up, Julio Arce, 9,200, taking on Shaman Moraes at 7,000. Line on this fight is, to me, just bizarrely wide. Julio Arce, minus 260, comeback on Moraes, plus 200. Arce is a Tiger Showman's fighter, stand-up fighter. Moraes, traditional Muay Thai Brazilian. Had a close fight against Matt Sales last time out, where he won the first two rounds and faded. So gas tanks a concern. Arce, his last fight is escaping me at the moment. One of the Tamers. Danny Tamer, a win over Dan Ige. What has to be concerning here, this is going to be a stand-up fight. I don't think Shaman Moraes is going to get knocked out. And Arce in his win scores 80, 66, and 70. 9,200, I think there are better options. And I think Moraes is totally live in a kickboxing match. He's got the Muay Thai. I would lean Arce. I just don't think he scores well. Give me Arce by decision. Joe?
This is a better fight for betting than I think for DraftKings because I love Arce. I mean, Golden Gloves boxer, Jersey guy, Tiger Schulman, teammate of Jimmy Rivera. I like Arce a lot. I mean, I was on him from the beginning when he made his debut. And I just don't think he's going to be a great – this is a real tough test for him, and I don't think this is going to be a great fight for DraftKings. And especially with his price point, I will probably be more exposed to Moraes, but I will pick Arce to win.
Chris?
Yeah, I actually think this is a good style matchup for Arce, just because Moraes tends to, you know, as you said, the Muay Thai tends to stand straight up and also doesn't really pressure. I've said before that I think one of Arce's weaknesses is if you pressure him and keep the pressure on him, he sort of freezes, but he's not going to have that problem here. I also think, you know, your Muay Thai point is granted, especially with the kicks. We actually saw Ige and Tamer land quite a few kicks on him, and I would say that Moraes' kicks are harder than either of those guys. So that's something to consider. But I would also just say that, you know, we've seen Arce be very good defensively. We've seen him counter that is very effectively, and Moraes is just very, you know, very wild with the overhands and leaves himself very open, and I think Arce is going to have a lot of opportunity here. Does he finish? I don't know, and for that reason I agree with you that maybe he's not the best favorite play on the card at the over 9,000 mark, but you know, if you want to take a dog play on Moraes, maybe just because, you know, as the competition gets better, we're really going to see what Arce is made of. But just as far as what the pick is and who I think is going to win the fight, I think this is a style matchup that favors Arce.
All right, moving on. Sajara Eubanks, 9,400, taking on Roxanne Matafari at 6,800. Oh, just does me go. I get to the odds. Sorry, Eubanks is a -625 favorite. Matafari +415. This fight is an over -303 to go to decision. It does my heart well to see when someone talks tons of shit on social media. They go out and they miss weight. Jara Eubanks, you're a bantamweight. We're done. You're not getting a title shot. Move on. That being said, clearly I'm not a fan of Sajara Eubanks. Look, Roxanne Matafari is someone I'm considering in cash because she can last. We saw this fight once before. Roxanne is a smart fighter. I know she's not good, guys. I get it. I know Sajara has the potential and the talent. I don't know if she gets a finish here. We saw Roxanne sweep in the other fight. She's decent on the ground, decent top control. I know Sajara is a black belt as well and has more power, but Roxanne has a floor. Watch Sajara go out and start you here. The pick is Sajara Eubanks. I can't go against the -625 favorite. And I will say, even though I like both sides of this fight more than I like either side of the last fight in terms of Lyman Good and Ben Saunders, give me this fight for various reasons on each side. Chris, we'll start with you.
Yeah. I pretty much agree. I mean, the problem is, I like Roxy. But the problem is that, even if she's looking good early, as she wasn't in their on their fight in the Ultimate Fighter house, there you go, and moving in and out and landing combinations, the problem she's going to have all fight is that she's just not going to be able to hurt Sajara, and Sajara is going to be able to hurt her. So if you're looking for a Roxy win here, she needs to go in and out and stick and move for three rounds, basically, before either Sajara lands a big shot or she takes her down, which led to her losing the Contender Series fight. You know, having said that, though, Roxy for 6,900, you know, she's going to throw a lot. And if she can survive...
6,800, no?
6,800.
Take that 100 to get from good to DC.
Yeah, there you go. But, she just never stops throwing. So if she can survive, she would be a good – she has a solid cash floor at the very least. And if she happens to survive and eke out a decision victory, then that's great. But, again, I think that's just going to be tough for her to do. And Sajara is better on the ground. I believe she's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu champion. So it just – as much as I want her to win, it's going to be really hard outside of her fighting the perfect fight that sees her just outboxing Sajara over three rounds. So give me Eubanks and maybe by submission yet again.
Yeah, we all want to see Sajara lose, but I think we're on the same page. Joe?
Yeah, I mean, look, this fight happened already, right? So,
don't get caught up in that. You know my rule.
I know. So, but anyway, look, I like Roxanne too. She did get the crap beat out of her for three rounds, and tough. I like Eubanks here quite a bit. more than a number of fighters in this salary range, but only if she gets to finish. I don't think she's going to get you the points you need if she doesn't get the finish, if this goes to a three-round decision. But I do, it's pretty straightforward pick for me. I don't know what the weight is going to be on Roxanne Modafari. I will probably be under to whatever that number is, but I do like Eubanks a fair bit here.
All right, moving on. Jason Knight, 8,800, taking on Jordan Rinaldi at 7,400. The odds on this fight, Jason Knight's the favorite, minus 270. Rinaldi plus 205. This is an interesting fight because I do my own solo early in the week video on YouTube, and I had somebody in chat really high on Jordan Rinaldi. And actually, this isn't the one that really got me going. We'll get to later. I want you guys to process this real quick. Somebody, I got sidetracked in my whole episode because someone was telling me that Jared Cannonier is a better striker than David Branch. Just put that in your minds until we get there because I didn't know how to respond. Jordan Rinaldi, he's got one UFC win. It's over Alvaro Herrera. Jason Knight's 8,800. People are looking at, you know, his last three losses. Makwan Amirkani, I thought he won that fight. I get it. Mowgli Benitez, top 15 guy. Ricardo Lamas, top 5 guy. Now he gets Jordan Rinaldi. 1-2 in the UFC, one win over Alvaro Herrera. I get Rinaldi could grapple. I don't think he gets Knight down enough. I hope Knight goes back to the sprawling and not, you know, pulling rubber guard, which who knows what will happen then. But Knight's the better fighter, desperately needs a win. He's a guy who's beaten Chas Skelly, Dan Hooker. Like, give me Jason Knight here. I to steal a line from Chris, Rinaldi's got to show me before I ever take Jordan Rinaldi. I was on Alvaro Herrera just in a high GPP fight. So Jason Knight for me. And Joe, you're up for this one.
Yeah, so this is the other fighter. I was talking about the UFC was throwing two fighters a bone. This is the other fighter. So Jason Knight got re-signed by the UFC coming off of three losses. How often do you see that? I mean, if you have a fight or so left on your contract and you're coming off three losses, maybe the UFC lets you fight your contract out. But getting re-signed coming off of three losses tells you that the UFC likes this guy. I mean, he's an exciting fighter. The other big, big piece of narrative here is that he has finally left the Alan Belcher camp and is now training with Team Alpha Male. This is a great weight class for Team Alpha Male. And he admittedly, in an interview, was telling people how he was getting roughed up there, you know, which is a good thing. I mean, he obviously had a limited amount of training partners. So you got the Mississippi Mean going up to Northern Cal. They probably need Google Translate whenever this guy speaks. But other than that, I like fighters coming off of a first camp at Team Alpha Male generally do pretty good. And I love the narrative and the whole fact that the UFC is likely tossing him a bone here. So I do like Jason Knight here.
Chris, how about for you?
Yeah, Jason Knight rounds out my, I think, trio on this card of fighters who I just don't understand why people like them. That's a little harsh. I get why you might like Knight, I guess, because he's a pressure fighter. You know, he can wrestle a little bit. He can grapple. We saw him go very heavy on the wrestling in, I think it was the Benitez fight. Didn't work out for him. He kept losing position, but he did keep trying it. But he just doesn't defend strikes. As long as you can, he can dip his head once. If you throw combinations at him, he'll eat the second shot every time. And I think Jordan Rowley's defense isn't great. Like, a more sophisticated striker would obviously get the hint that, okay, he's going to throw one shot, duck, and then duck out of the way and pivot and strike again and maybe, throw an uppercut or something. But I don't expect Jason Knight to be sophisticated enough to be able to do that. He hit how do you say that name?
That's why you guys keep me around. We were 5 minutes late.
Just call him Mr. Finland.
That's it, yeah. He hit Mr. Finland with a couple of good strikes off of clinch situations when his chin was way too high. But and I think that if Rinaldi chooses to brawl with him, I think that's a bad idea. I think Jason Knight would probably have the edge there. But I think that he just gets tagged up too much, and I don't think he's going to be able to out-grapple Rinaldi, and he might try. He might very well try. So, I'm going to, for that price and for the savings, I'm going to go Rinaldi here.
Joe, how about for you? Oh, wait.
I gave my
Oh, God. See, I start talking crap, and I make a mistake like that. Let's read chat real quick. I did want to touch on that. I don't think he's at Team Alpha Male full time. If I say your name wrong, I'm sorry. Nandalal Rasia. I'm sure I fucked that up. I'm sorry. 2.5 weeks out of an 8-week camp. And Dave LB says Rinaldi did pretty well against Trujillo.
And Will says that he's no longer a fan of mine, which I'm heartbroken, Will. Come on, come back to me.
You don't want to kick Diaz. I'm done with you, Chris. Well, you know what? He's
I'll
right.
I'll win you back. I'll win you back.
Who's done with Chris?
Will and chat. Will in chat, because he doesn't like Hick Diaz. You have to like Hick Diaz. He's fun, at least. Or funny. Moving on. We're up to the main card already, guys. Israel Adesanya, 9,100, taking on Derek Brunson, 7,100. Adesanya is the pretty large favorite here in Beret, -300. Brunson +225. Brunson says he's going to try and get him out of there on the first round. The under is plus money, though. Under 1.5, +120 at the moment. Look, Brunson, we've seen him try and be cagier against Anderson Silva, which I do think he won that fight. Adesanya, we've seen him improve. A lot of hype on him. This is Brunson's, your gatekeeper guy in that division. I think Adesanya's the real deal. He really impressed me against Brad Tavares. If Brunson runs forward, I think Adesanya's going to tag him. These two really don't like each other. I think it's going to be an emotional fight, and I think that actually favors Adesanya here. So give me Adesanya to do something crazy impressive. Chris?
Yeah, they really don't like each other, and the trash talk got to a fever pitch when Derek Brunson said, "You're skinny." That was some real heavy trash talk there. But
Brunson's not good at trash talking at all.
I love trying to hearing the guys that aren't good at trash talk trying to awkwardly navigate their way through it. It makes me happy. But I'm going to take Israel Adesanya as well. I think it's funny because I was thinking about the Jacare Brunson fight. And for those of you who remember, and if not, I'll remind you, my central point of this fight was that it wasn't going to be all that different from the last time they fought, because Derek Brunson hasn't ever really changed the way he fights. It's funny. I remember when he got knocked out by Whitaker, and that was when most people expected Brunson to beat him. And he was everywhere on TV saying, "Oh man, why didn't I stick to the game plan? Why didn't I fight smarter?" But he always fights like that. He always has fought like that. He's going to come forward and try to wing shots, but he's just so stiff and upright that I think there's an excellent chance that Adesanya is going to catch him. As Sean said, if Adesanya can't deal with that kind of just raw blitzing forward, then Brunson could knock him out. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility, but I can't bank on that, just because a guy like Adesanya, what we have to remember is a guy like that, every fight he's going to be better. And even in the Tavares fight, we saw him deal with pressure better there. He didn't deal with it very well in the Vettori fight, but he dealt with it better in the Tavares fight. So he's making strides. I expect him to be obviously the way cleaner striker. I expect him to be able to evade and counter-strike. And, yeah, I think he knocks Brunson out too.
So how about for you?
Okay, so I'm going to take Brunson here. There's some narrative, of course. I was at the fight against Brad Tavares. I actually had perfect seats, had a nice little suite overhanging the ring at the where was it? It was a small venue. It was the one of the hotels had a small venue for the tough finale, and I just so happens that one of Tavares's trainers walked into our suite, as did like one of the Pettis brothers. It was a really cool event. So I'm diverging here, but the trainer told us that this was kind of, there was this rumor leading up to the fight that Tavares might have to pull out because he was injured. He had two serious injuries, and he took that fight. everybody's wondering, well, why didn't, you know, we know what Adesanya's kryptonite is. Why didn't Tavares take him down? Because he couldn't. And it wasn't because of his great takedown defense. It was because he literally could not take him down because he couldn't bend. He had two major injuries going into that fight. I want to see a little bit more. I want to see if, you know, on paper, Brunson is the best wrestler he's ever faced. Unfortunately, Brunson doesn't wrestle all that much, which is a shame. You know, Brunson left Jackson Wink and runs his own camp. Now, I don't believe he went back to Jackson Wink. I believe he runs his own camp someplace down in North Carolina. Not the best fight IQ. However, I am going to take a major leap of faith here that Adesanya is not as developed as some people think he is. And I am going to, if not throw out his fight against Tavares, I am going to discount it based on the fact I know how hurt Tavares was and how his trainers did not want him to take that fight. And he's just maybe too tough for his own good. I will be impressed if Adesanya knocks out Derek Brunson, but my selection, and I will have a fair number of shares of Derek Brunson. I will also be playing Adesanya, but my pick is Derek Brunson.
All right, moving on. Carl Roberson, 8,700, taking on Jack Marshman at 7,500. Roberson, the favorite, minus 300, plus 225 to come back on Marshman. Look, the blind probably shouldn't be this wide, but Jack Marshman, to me, is a one-dimensional boxer. His UFC wins are Magnus Seidenblad and Ryan James. And he went to a decision with Ryan James. Whereas Carl Roberson, former Glory kickboxer, showed a little bit of boxing his last, not boxing, a little bit of some ground game with Darren Stewart in his UFC debut. Before that and after that was beaten by Mutanchi, taken down and quickly subbed. That's not Marshman's game. That is where Roberson is weak. Striker versus striker. Marshman's a boxer. Roberson's a kickboxer. I think Roberson's faster. I think he's stronger. He's younger. He's more explosive. Give me Carl Roberson in a fight that I think stays on the feet for three rounds. Joe?
Okay, so Roberson is an 0-3 kickboxer in Glory.
Fair.
Yes, he's a kickboxer. You know, Darren Stewart might have the worst ground game of any fighter in the division. I see Roberson as having two very distinct advantages over Marshman. One is speed and two is athleticism, right? I think Marshman is a better technical striker. I think he can fight at range. Seidenblad is probably better than anyone that Roberson has ever fought. So I thought that was actually a pretty good win against Seidenblad.
I mean, he fought Mutanchi, but he got destroyed. So
yeah, he got destroyed. I am going to, again, I keep going with the dogs here, and I know it's going to be another pork chop for me, but I am going to pick Marshman here. I would advise having shares of Roberson on DraftKings because of his inside the distance prop. But I am going to have some shares of Marshman, and I'm going to officially pick Marshman for the win here.
Chris?
This to me is my most confident pick of the card besides, like, you know, DC or somebody. But I just don't really see what there is to like in this matchup. I feel like, and it's funny because Joe even acknowledged, it's like, well, he's faster and more athletic. Well, speed really matters in these striking battles. You know, I think this is going to look a little bit like, now not totally because I think Marshman's the better striker, but I think this is going to look a little bit like Jeff Neal and Frank Camacho, where he's just going to be lighting him up just because he's going to beat him to the punch every time. And not only is he going to be faster, but Marshman tends to leave himself out of position when he throws. That's how Ryan James was able to tag him up. Even after Ryan James was getting tagged, he was answering back. That submission win wasn't totally out of the blue for Roberson. He's got other submission wins on the regional scene, so he's at least a confident top submission grappler. So he can bring the fight there if he wants to. And you're expecting him to stand at range, and he's going to eat kicks when he does that. So I think Roberson probably knocks him out. Go ahead on this.
Could happen. I'm not super confident in my pick here, but I am going to stay with Marshman.
All right, David Branch, 9,300, taking on Jared Cannonier at 6,900. Cannonier is the big underdog, plus 260. Branch minus 360. The only worry I have in this fight for David Branch is how does he deal with no longer facing Jacare and facing a replacement in Jared Cannonier. The only way he doesn't win this fight is if he doesn't show up. Look, Jared Cannonier has been in, I believe he had a fight at heavyweight, light heavyweight. Now he's in middleweight. He is a air traffic controller. Seems like a really nice guy, not a full-time fighter. I don't think he's made that change yet, nor is he going to. I get he's been in there with big competition in Jan Blachowicz, Iwan Kutalaba. He does have a win over. David Branch is just better. Knocked out my head to Santos. I teased it earlier. Am I crazy, or is Jared Cannonier actually a better striker than David Branch? Because that's what somebody was trying to sell me. So give me David Branch. It's all about how much you think he scores in this one. He could play conservative. And you do have to question where his mindset is for the late notice replacement fight that's in front of him. All that being said, Chris, we'll start with you.
This is our second fighter on the card, the first one being Burgos, that just doesn't have any idea how to deal with a jab. If you go back to that Blachowicz fight, that's all Blachowicz did. That's basically how he won the fight. Blachowicz just kept sticking the jab in his face, and it effectively shut down Cannonier's entire game. I've never really seen anything like it. Branch has a good stinging jab himself. He's a good pressure boxer. He has an excellent ground game. He has a good wrestling game. And that's really where you can say, I mean, you could even say if you wanted, Cannonier's a pretty good defensive boxer. I think he's a better defensive boxer than he gets credit for. And I like him. I don't dislike him. I think he may have regressed a little bit since he's shown up here, but that's a different thing. But I just think that even if I'm wrong about the pressure, and let's say that Cannonier is able to take that pressure away because he likes the pressure as well, I don't think that will happen. But even if I'm wrong about that, Cannonier can't stop a takedown. And as good as he is at, like, recovering guard and stuff and keeping himself relatively safe from strikes, he can't really get back to his feet. He's not gonna threaten from the bottom. And he's, my question would be, where does Cannonier win this fight? And my answer is basically nowhere. I think he may stop him. Cannonier's a tough guy. We all remember him infamously walking forward with his hands down while Iwan Kutalaba was punching him. That was a great moment. But as far as the winner of the fight, I think Branch would have to really try to lose this one. So
I will say, I don't sound like a hate guard Cannonier, just David Branch is top 10 middleweight. Cannonier should absolutely be in the UFC. There are plenty of guys who have full-time jobs who are fighting. But the dude's been in there with killers. Like, let's give this guy a fight he can win. Don't cut Jared Cannonier after this.
Sean, just pointing out that in chat, we have confirmation that Cannonier is a full-time fighter, went full-time after the Sheriff fight. I believe I heard something like that as well.
Yeah, okay. I was just going to say that, actually. And he is training at MMA Lab, I believe.
So
in
good,
Arizona.
By the way, air traffic controller is a really good.
So
job. I wouldn't have given that up.
Yeah. So he is. I believe he's training at the MMA Lab. I like this cut to middleweight. I like him training at the MMA Lab in Arizona. This could be a really bad night for me. Branch, I was at that fight in Atlantic City where he knocked out Santos. That's what, like, I like to refer to as a flash knockout. We know Santos was having a bit of a hard time making weight, hence the move up to middleweight. I'm not going to say that he would not have been knocked out if the fight was at light heavy, but maybe he wouldn't have been knocked out if he didn't have to cut all that weight. I'm going to pick Cannonier here. I mean, I do advise that you have shares of both guys. I like the price savings on Cannonier. I'm going to give him a shot here. I know I'm picking a lot of dogs. I will have shares of Branch. He's one of my least favorite fighters at this point in that price range. I think that, the size, Cannonier will definitely have some size on him. I like the fact that he's training at MMA Lab. you know, I'm going to take a, and you mentioned that he was training for a fight with Jacare. This is a different type of fight. I will pick Cannonier here, but I do advise, I will have more shares of him, but you should probably have a few shares of Branch as well.
Sorry, I gotta ask, how does he win? How do you see him winning?
Striking.
He's gonna knock him out?
Decision.
Striking by,
We'll see. He would have to have made some big improvements, but
like I said, again, not a super confident pick, but
you're gonna like my hot take a bunch because I got mine queued up. All right. Chris Weidman, 8,500, taking on Jacare Souza, 7,700. Weidman is the favorite, minus 190. The comeback on Jacare, plus 150. We all wish this fight would have happened 4 years ago. It's happening now. Interesting. I think we all know the breakdown of these next two fights pretty well. I'll go through it real quick before we get to how to play it. Weidman, better wrestler, is a black belt. Jacare, still way better jiu-jitsu. Can he get Weidman down? I don't know. Then will Jacare gas? Personally, I think this fight stays on the feet. I don't think Jacare can get it down. I don't think Weidman's going to want to go down there early. I think they stay at range. Jacare has more power. Weidman's more technical, in my opinion. I'm going to lean towards the guy I've seen with the better gas tank and who's won a world championship. Give me Chris Weidman at 8,500. But this is a fight I'm probably going to have a little bit of both sides on. But I'm definitely more confident in Weidman. Joe?
Wow. You know, this is an interesting fight. I mean, I'm a little concerned, you know, by the fact that Weidman has been hurt badly in each of his last three fights. I'm a little concerned about the fact that Weidman is 1-2 in New York. I'm a little concerned about the fact that Weidman has had a litany of injuries, which in some way contributed to his inactivity. I'm a little bit concerned that his path to victory is likely taking Jacare down, which is maybe not the smartest thing to do with a 6-degree black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. On the other hand, Jacare is, 37, 38, while Weidman's 34.
Jacare was 40, not yet?
I don't think so. I don't think yet he's 40. I think he's 37 or 38. This is a tough one for me. It's hard for me to be super confident in Weidman. I what's interesting is I could see Jacare, while these guys are still dry, perhaps hurting Weidman enough and then having the skill set to actually finish him, where maybe, you know, in the other fights, he didn't get finished. But I think the longer this fight goes, it will probably benefit Weidman. Oh, shit. I've been picking so many dogs here. I'm going to take Weidman to win this fight in New York. I have a lot of concerns about it. I am not going to have, I may be, based on how the lineups fall out and the pricing, have more shares of Jacare, just simply because I think he's a fairly solid GPP play at his price point. But I'm going to pick Weidman to win.
Chris, how about you?
I think that a real eye-opener for me on Jacare was he had – Kelvin Gastelum mounted in the center of the cage and couldn't finish. That amazed me. I never would have thought, if you would have told me before the fight, if you would have given me some odds that were like, I don't know, minus 700, whatever crazy thing. He's like, okay, we're going to give him mount. Is he going to finish? Of course I would have said yes. It didn't happen. He instead tries to roll off for some armbar when he's, blocked off by the cage and then loses position. It was so strange to me. It dawned on me that a lot of Jacare's finishes, talking the last couple of years by sub, have all taken place when he can trap you against the cage and limit your options there. He's very good at that. And I'm not saying he couldn't sub these guys out anyway. I'm just wondering if he's still that same guy who can get it done from anywhere, because it really did shock me that he wasn't able to finish Gastelum. I understand the hesitancy for Weidman. Joe brought it up. He gets hurt like in every fight. But I think that, he's going to be the better striker, although Jacare is certainly a game striker. We saw him, even though when he was dead tired in that Gastelum fight, he was winging some hard right hands that were landing. But that 6-inch reach advantage too, I think he's going to be able to keep him on the end. He actually is good at fighting long. you know, if it goes to the ground, can he blow him out? I don't know. I mean, Weidman, you know, is a jiu-jitsu champion in his own right. Not in the not the same caliber as Jacare, certainly, but, you know, he knows what he's doing. I trust Weidman to keep himself safe enough on the ground that he can win this fight on the feet if he wants, and so that's why I'm going one.
Tom Green touched on what Joe said. Weidman tends to shit the bed in New York. He does, but, yeah, I mean, I wish this fight would happen 3 or 4 years ago. I really do. But, Will, by the way, going back to the last fight, come on, I think Cannonier or Joe, you're hoping the fight goes to a striking decision. Even in a loss, he gets 40 to 50 DK points.
Well, I mean, I get it. But you need, you know, if all the favorites win, okay, I'm not saying that 40 or 50 points is going to do it, but if all of the favorites win and you don't have one dog, you got to look at who's going to go the distance and who's going to score some points. So
Modafferi.
Well, yeah, I suppose. I mean, yeah.
But I get it. There's up there even Jason Knight, who I'm picking. I don't think he's going to finish Rinaldi. There's merit to that for sure.
Look, I'm not super confident about that pick either. It's just you got to look for some dogs here. If you're going to do a Stars and Scrubs lineup, the mid-range is not attractive at all. If you're going to do a Stars and Scrub lineup, who are your scrubs going to be? You got to find some.
All right, main event time. Derek the Black beats Lewis. Good old Hot Balls himself, 6,600, taking on Daniel DC Cormier, 9,600, the champ. The champ is a minus 700 favorite. Derek Lewis plus 450. Derek Lewis fighting for free Popeye's chicken for life. Very important. look, we all know this. Cormier, better wrestler, better fighter, technically. Lewis, way bigger, freakishly strong. He gets hurt in all his fights, but hasn't been finished. I'm trying to look real quick. Mark Hunt did finish him in the fourth round. But has been hurt in so many fights. Tabora fight, Volkov had him hurt, Travis Brown had him hurt. He was losing to Shamil Abdurakhimov. You know, he's losing a fight until he wins. I don't think he does this here against DC. I think DC should just throw up 100 points here, even if it goes a couple rounds with the takedowns and passing and Lewis getting back up. With DC's hand being broken, I think that makes me feel even better that he's not going to want to try and strike, although that shouldn't be the game plan anyway against Derek Lewis, just because one shot could put you out, even though technically Cormier is probably the better technical boxer. But with his hand being broken, I don't think even if he thought that would be a path, he probably won't even go there. Just rely on his wrestling. Do what he did to Rumble Johnson. Get a win here. Give me DC relatively confidently. I don't think there'll be a surprise here. And I think Lewis is going to garner some ownership. So if you like Lewis, I think he's actually going to be relatively popular because of the whole hot ball.
Oh, yeah.
And just that he's cheap. So usually in this spot, I'd want to like take a couple shots. I think your leverage is either going to be go over the field, go over that 20-30% if you really think he's going to win, or no underdogs are going to win and you think he lasts, maybe. Or the other way is go get leverage and totally fade him. That's, I think, your options with this fight. Give me DC to roll over Derek Lewis, and good for Derek Lewis, good guy, provide for his family, get that payday, get that money. DC for the victory. Chris, start us off with the main event.
Yeah. The funny thing about Derek Lewis is
his balls are hot.
Well, of course, and his Instagram and all that stuff. But watching his fights back, I mean, he obviously gets tired, but I don't think he gasses in the sense where he can't fight. That doesn't have anything to do with a back injury. If you look at his fight against Marcin Tabora had his back like three times in that fight. He grappled him a ton, and he was still able to come in the third and get the finish. So I think Lewis is going to fight for as long as he's in there. I don't think – if his back is okay, I don't think we're going to have to worry about him just, you know, dead stopping because he's tired. So that's one thing. DC – I mean, I should preface all this by saying that I think DC is going to win, but it's boring to just say that, so I'm going to get into it a little bit. I think that DC stands – too much in pretty much every fight. He gets tagged hard. in pretty much every fight that he decides to stand in, because I think he tries to prove points or whatever he's trying to do. But in short notice fights where he's got stuff to lose, like we saw in that fight against Silva, I know that was different. It was like 3 days, but this is still a short notice fight where he has a lot to lose. So in that fight, he wrestled immediately, and that's all he did. And I could see him doing that here. A lot of single legs, trying to make the big guy balance, take him down. I could see him going to that crucifix position that he got the finish on Volkan with, because Lewis is a hard guy to hold down. He basically just Ultimate Warrior bench presses you off of him. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that to DC, but I think DC is going to opt for control positions here and try to tire him out at least to an extent where he's a little bit slower. And that's kind of how I see the fight going until Lewis gives his back, maybe trying to sloppily stand up, and DC gets the sub.
A la Rumble Johnson. Joe?
Well, I'm not going to have that much of an analysis. This is a risky fight, though, for DC. He already went out once and said he wasn't fighting, for the rest of 2018 due to his hand injury. Now, with that said, aside from whatever he gets for pay-per-view and Reebok and merchandising, his base is $500K. He does not get paid a bonus for winning unless he gets like a fight of the night bonus. So DC will make a minimum of $500K plus Reebok, plus pay-per-view points. So I think he's saying, you know what? Yeah, I'll fight again in 2018. But if he loses, this could jeopardize – a lot of additional money. So there is a risk here to this fight. And we all know that Derek Lewis has got hands. So I am picking DC to win here. I like DC. I think you should have exposure to him in DraftKings. However, I would take a few punts with Lewis. I think you're crazy if you go greater than 5% with Lewis. But I think you take a few shots. I do see DC getting the win here. But I would definitely look at 5%, maybe Lewis. If you're playing 20 lineups, put Lewis in one.
But I liked Sean's point, actually. In order to counterbalance the field, I liked that that point about either going a lot or not going at all, because I do think he's going to be unnecessarily highly owned.
Yes. Somebody asked, I like Popeye supports the Texan, not their fellow Louisiana native. Is there any way Big Lou is able to stuff some of Cormier's takedowns? Somebody said no shot. Look, probably not, but Lewis is so much bigger and stronger that maybe the first one he's able to just pure strength shuck him off. That wouldn't totally stun me, but the second that Cormier tries to chain wrestle, it's a problem.
Cormier loves that single leg too. He's very good at it. There's no way that Big Derek Lewis is going to be able to balance for more than 5 consecutive seconds on one leg. So I would say no. I would say no.
And somebody says, are there any heavyweights with more finishes in the third round or later than Derek Lewis?
Not many.
Probably not.
Not that I can think of.
He's heavyweight Yoel Romero is what he is.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Okay, guys, that's it for the breakdown. Let's get to the hot takes. My hot takes, since I have – queued up. The favorites on this card. I don't know what I'm going to go super hot take. I might miss by one.
You said 11 and 2, didn't you?
I was going to say 12 and 1. Will you let me get away with 11 and 2 as a hot take?
I think that's a hot take.
11 and 2. Favorites go 11 and 2 on this card.
So I'm not going to do that because although I do believe that number will go over. I'm going to say that there will be at least two fighters that are currently at plus 200 odds that will win tomorrow.
Okay.
Plus 200 or higher that will win tomorrow.
Lima's not there, so I can't.
Lima's plus 180 right now.
Yeah, so if you went plus 180, I'd say you had a great shot. Yeah.
No, plus 200 or higher right now.
Chris, what do you got?
Yeah, you took mine, Sean. Mine was going to have to do with the favorites as well. But I think I will go – where am I going to go? Okay, how about Halabala and Rinaldi both get stoppage wins?
Ooh, that's big.
My
hot take happens. You realize that, right?
Holy crap.
If that happens, my hot take happens. So we both hit our hot takes.
I'll let you say just Rinaldi getting a stoppage win is.
Well, I want take. Both.
All okay. right, go for it. Holy okay. crap.
Wow.
You need to go on your local Well, you're in Jersey. Go to your local sports book or go online. I need you to find the parlay for $5. Rinaldi inside the distance, and what was the other one?
I'll tell you what. I'll do it on Gamble Master this week. I'll post it.
Absolutely, post that up. All right, guys. Anything to add for this card?
No, that's it. We'll see you guys next week in Denver. Sean and I'll be tweeting out from MSG tomorrow night. If we don't win, I hope you win.
Let's put a bow on it. RotoWire.com/free 10-day trial. No credit card required. Follow all of us on Twitter at Real Chris Olson, at Sun Tzu, at the DFS Sniper with 1S. Chris, anything to add? Any parting shot?
I'm just gonna say because I was looking at I get to control all the analytics and stuff on the RotoWire. We're growing pretty fast here. We used to get like an average of just over 200. Now our average is in the mid 300s, and our UFC 229 broke 400 views. So we're growing very quickly. We appreciate it. I love all you guys. I love talking fights with all you guys. Thanks so much for the support, and stick around.
You know, me and you really didn't get into it, which is what I think people really enjoy. Although, no, we had one good one in there. So yeah. You know what? I hope we delivered. It's always fun. All in good fun. I think it helps everyone's game. Guys, in terms of growing, you should take this video, if you're watching it, send it to a friend, and they send it to two friends, and they send it to two friends, and then me, Joe, and Chris are on Sirius XM.
There you go.
Guys, take care.
Peace out.
Good luck in your contest. We will see you at UFC 230 and then next week in Denver. Good luck, guys.